Good morning, cricket fans, and welcome to the Catch It podcast.
Oh, what a catch!
I'm Andrew Lush, and I started this podcast to have some interesting and insightful conversations about analytics and the stats behind the action, and to develop myself as a presenter. I hope you enjoy our discussions and debates.
That is an absolutely outstanding catch.
On this episode of the Catch Podcast, I sit down with Lily Harvey and Oliver Walter-Peel, two great cricket journalists and commentators who run the How's That podcast, where they interview players, coaches, and other members of the professional cricketing community. We talk everything Women's T20 World Cup, both of them chatting about their choice game changers and young guns that will be battling it out in the competition that starts this weekend. We only had Ollie for the first half of the podcast because he had to shoot off for another commentary engagement. It was brilliant to sit down with these two, and here's our conversation. Welcome the How's That podcast crew to the Catch It podcast. How are you doing, Ollie and Lily?
Very well, how are you?
Yeah, really good, thank you.
Brilliant. It's the first time I've had multiple guests on the podcast, so I'm excited to see how this plays out. We're going to go through Ollie's young gun and his game changer first, and then we'll work onto Lily's later in the show, because Ollie is shooting to a football match after this podcast recording. I'm intrigued because both of you have brought in very different game changers and young guns, so there's plenty in this podcast for all different nationalities, all different fans of cricket. So, Ollie, we'll go straight to you. You've gone for a game changer of Harmanpreet Kaur.
Yeah, I have. And look, obviously both of, you know, me and Lily are based in Australia and we're both English. So it was one of those things where I kind of wanted to go somewhere outside of those two circles. And then obviously, you know how, you know, Indian fans are brilliant, aren't they? So, you know, we can bring the Indian fans into it as well. And Harmanpreet Kaur seems like a perfect player to be able to do that. Obviously, has done so much in white ball cricket for India, been a staple at the top of the order, and also played in some domestic stuff as well. We've seen her in the Big Bash over here in Australia as well. So, you know, we've been able to have a front row seat to that as well when she's been playing for the Renegades in Melbourne. But she's incredible. Her record speaks for itself, averaging 38 in ODIs, just over 28 in T20s. She's got a T20 100, 5 in the ODI as well. So, look, her record basically speaks for herself. And I think if you're going to go for a game changer, particularly outside of England and Australia, you can't look much further past Harmanpreet Kaur.
And she's coming into her own in a pretty good time for Indian cricket with the women's. Oh, I'm still calling it the women's IPL. I don't mind if it's called the, what is its official title?
Women's Premier League, I think.
The
it is.
Women's Premier League. I'm not WPL. Too sure about that, but the WPL.
It's better than what they had originally, because originally they were just going to call it the Women's T20 League, weren't they? It's better than what they originally had, so.
We'll go with it. The WPL sounds a bit more closer to the IPL. So she's going to be, of course, she's going to be the front line for one of those franchises. And it's a really exciting time for Indian cricket with a lot of young talent coming through. How do you think she's going to kind of bring that younger talent through into the Indian squad?
Well, you know what you're going to get with Harmanpreet Kaur. I think that's the one thing. You're going to get not only someone who can bat and who can play at the top of the order, you're going to get a leader. She's very, very experienced. She's 33 now. You know, not only are you going to get a top order player, you're going to get a top leader as well. And that's, I think, arguably more important than her cricketing skills, you know, out there on the pitch is how she's going to lead and how she's going to bring these younger players through. I think she's going to act like a mentor. We've seen so many people do it in the past, both in the women's and the men's game. So I feel like Harmanpreet Kaur is just another one you can add to that list. And I think the way she plays anyway, you can tell that she's been around for a while. You know, she's experienced. So I feel like that's going to help Indian cricket, not only in this World Cup, but beyond that as well.
No, 100%. I think going back to the WPL, I think she's going to be one of those key cornerstone players for a franchise, like Dhoni has been for Chennai Super Kings, like Kohli has been for Bangalore, and like Rohit Sharma has been for Mumbai Indians. I think when we see who's going to be playing in what franchises, one franchise is going to go big on Harmanpreet Kaur being their leader and being one of their key batters. And I think that's one of the things that keeps her in the T20 side and the ODI side. Obviously, she's so talented with the bat and she has kind of can play that role with kind of a couple of useful overs. But in terms of her leadership and bringing through young talent, and with the under-19s win for India, bring through that young talent and creating a real India to be a real force in the game, I think that's going to be really interesting. Do you see her playing? How long do you think she'll play for India in terms of before potentially other roles in terms of maybe coaching or administration or kind of playing in the WPL kind of take over from her playing role?
Well, I know you mentioned Dhoni there when you were talking about the WPL and the role he's at the IPL, but he's a cricketer that just seems to be timeless. And I feel like Harmpreet Kaur, you can't really counter out for playing for a fair while because obviously you see some cricketers retire at like 34, 35. Harmpreet Kaur might do that, but you also can't, you know, you can't really counter out for saying, right, she could go another 4 or 5 years, you wouldn't be surprised. So it's a really tough one, but let's say this, she's not going to be out of a job if she retires from cricket. It's just going to be someone who just, you know, employs her straight away. So she's going to be fine long-term. How long she's going to play? I'll say three years. I'll give it 3 years. I feel like that's a diplomatic answer, but if it's shorter, I wouldn't be surprised. If it's longer, I wouldn't be surprised either.
Yeah, if the WPL works out in terms of a long-term investment, she could be seeing playing for a franchise for a long time, maybe even after her international career ends.
Yeah, that's certainly something I can see, especially with the WPL coming up.
No, 100%.
It's a wonderful competition. I can't wait to see it get going.
I'm very excited to see what international stars are picked up. New franchise competition in women's cricket and a proper fully fledged franchise competition. I feel like there's going to be a theme ongoing talking about the WPL as we go on through this podcast, because there are a couple of game changers as young guns who definitely will throw their name in the ring for those slots as overseas and as well as domestic Indian players. So moving on to your young gun, Ollie, who have you selected for this episode?
We've gone back to the Australian/English roots for this, and we're going to go with the English player. On this one, we'll leave Lily to discuss Australian players because she's got a couple, not to spoil anything. Lauren Bell for me. I think this T20 World Cup might well signify a change in the guard of English, definitely fast bowling stocks. You've got Catherine Siverbrunt, as we now must call her. She's got a married name. I thought yesterday that was beautiful. You've had Kate Cross, obviously, who's done so well for English cricket, but now we've got the rising players in the English system. You've got, you know, the likes of Lauren Bell, Izzy Wong coming up, which is, I think they're the main two for mine, but there's plenty more on the way up as well. We've just seen England make it to the final of the Under-19s World Cup. We saw England in the 50-over World Cup last year just fall short. It's a really good time for women's cricket in England, and I think that Lauren Bell might be at the front of that. Her skill with the ball is incredible. Like, she's quick, absolutely rapid, can open the bowling, can bowl high and then come in later on and chuck the ball down in the death over as well when needed. She's just a complete cricketer. That's the way I describe Lauren Bell. And I feel like she's, you know, we've talked about Harmanpreet Kaur being the cornerstone for Indian cricket for so long. I feel like Lauren Bell, if she achieves her potential, will be that for England.
No, 100%. In terms of that Vipers unit has very much been pretty consistent in producing really good fast bowlers. You kind of have the likes of Freya Kemp coming through. You had Tara Norris, who has now moved up to my neck in the woods and is now working her trade with the Northwest Thunder. I'm not unhappy at all that they've moved on from her. So I think she's going to be brilliant for us. But yeah, Lauren Bell with that new ball in terms of pitching up, hitting that hard length and being able to move it in those early overs is really key. And then she comes back in the depth with potentially her slower ball and her ability to kind of mix up her pace. How important will that be for England in this World Cup?
Look, very. Again, we've seen, you know, how England have got a capability of being able to defend totals. But if it ends up being that England don't set a high total batting first, perhaps, you've got a player like Lauren Bell who can bowl. Now, look, you know, aside from Australia, you've got to see England as one of the favourites. They've had an impeccable tour of the West Indies just recently. They're coming into this on some really, really good form. So you would hope that, you know, Lauren Bell, it sometimes isn't having to do too much and the batters are putting runs on the board, especially as an England fan. That's what I'm hoping for. But if it's the case that England haven't put enough of a score on the board, you want to play like Lauren Bell. First up, give her the new ball and just challenge top order batters from around the world, whoever it may be. So that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. I think it's going to be crucial for England because I think she's one that can start an innings right on the front foot. And despite her young age, she's 22. I feel like she can sort of get players around her to lift and, you know, go with her in a sense. And when you couple with that with, you know, the experienced players that England have got in that bowling lineup, I think Lauren Bell is the perfect player to sort of have in that role.
100%. She can have a bit more of an aggressive role, as maybe potentially Brunt and Sivir kind of take hold of the middle overs. And then you also have Sarah Glenn, you have Sophie Eccleston. And if she comes back at the death then for maybe one or two, that could be really crucial for England in this World Cup. No, 100%. I think in terms of how she's going to develop through in the next couple of years, I definitely agree with you. She could become a cornerstone for England's attack going forward in the white ball game. She has a lot of skills and a lot of assets. She's also got that height in terms of she's able to kind of pitch in a pretty strong bouncer when she wants to. So her short pitch bowling could really come into effect on some tracks that maybe lend themselves to potentially thinking of future Ashes or future World Cups in those kind of conditions. But yeah, Lauren Bell is definitely going to be someone to watch in the next couple of years as a young gun fighting her way up and through. She's obviously playing for the Southern Brave in the 100. Still, well, we haven't had the retention lists declared yet. I'll be very much keeping a close eye on that. But at the moment, she's with that Southern Brave team, very successful unit, and still with Charlotte Edwards as their coach. And Charlotte Edwards really backed her, I think, in that role to take wickets and be aggressive at the top of the order in the 100. So I definitely see, would you see her potentially in the next couple of WBBL seasons coming down? Who would you say she'd play for?
Strikers.
Strikers. Strikers.
I'll take her.
But of course you would. But the Strikers, you don't need Lauren Bell. You've already
strikers
won.
They've got bowlers coming out there. You've got Dottins. You've got Tali McGrath. You have Darcy Brown, up and coming, who we've already talked about on the podcast before.
Megan Shoot.
Megan Shoot as well. Yeah. It goes on and on.
Can we just send her to anyone other than the Strikers? Because if she goes to the Strikers, they're going to be too good next year.
We know she looks good in England blue, so I think just a quick transfer to Strikers blue wouldn't be too tricky.
I was going to say England red, which would be the Renegades, and we need to be the best team in Melbourne, being a Stars man. So look, I'd take her in green. Green would be decent. Obviously,
we've got Capsy.
We've got Capsy.
You've got Lauren Winfield Hill.
Beth Heath as well. I'd take all three of them back, though, which is the issue. Like, maybe I don't think either of the Howzat teams would take her on. I think she's going to go elsewhere. But wherever she goes, she's going to do well.
The last time that Sydney Thunder was really challenging for the WBBL title was when Ishmael was with Heather Knight and Tammy Bowman. So my team, you know what? I would love to see Lauren Bell in the good old, I'd say, shocking green. Is it green? See this
Lime
thing,
green,
I'm,
I'd say.
I'm Lime colorblind green. And I think it's yellow, but every time I just have been just proven wrong. So for my colorblind eyes, amazing yellow, but I'd love to see her in Thunder gear.
Well, you know what? I'd think that if anywhere, it would be Thunder purely because they're the team that do a lot of swapping and changing. Obviously, I've watched the Big Bash since the very beginning. And like you said, you've had people in and out. Ishmael moving to Renegades, you know, Tammy Beaumont jumping in and out. And Heather Knight not really playing, sometimes playing, you know. So I think they change their team quite a lot and their internationals change quite a bit. Obviously, Heat have stayed, you know, relatively similar, having Amelia Kerr, like she's been there for a long time with the Heat. Like everyone's kept their internationals relatively similar over the past couple of years. So I think if anywhere, it'd be Renegades or Thunder for sure.
Liz Ali's moved around a fair bit. She was in both Melbourne colours, and now she's down playing her cricket down in Hobart and Tasmania.
Yeah, she's one of those ones who, like, she'll spend a couple of years somewhere and then she'll go, right, time for a new challenge. Let's mix it up a bit. So, a couple of years with Melbourne and, a couple more years probably with the Hurricanes.
No, 100%. I think she's in a good spot in her career to actually, with her kind of have families based down there now and potentially looking at some real glory days down for Hobart, even though it's none of our teams. But I'd say I've close links with Liz Ali, having her played for us for two seasons with the Manchester Originals. I'd say a brilliant, brilliant player for women's cricket in an age of progression and stuff. And she's really kind of progressed that with her strong striking and her she's a force to reckon with when she gets on a roll. Like she can rain boundaries on you like no one else. But it'll be interesting to see. But yes, let's go back to Lauren Bell. It'll be interesting to see if she potentially also gets, we'll say it again, a contract in the WPL. It's going to be interesting how that fits in with the whole rest of the cricket calendar. And if young talent miss out on the first couple of months of domestic English cricket to play WPL, that's going to be a bit of a controversial topic.
Yeah, it will, but we've seen it more in the men's game, haven't we? But these tournaments are opening up, and we see in the men's game, you've got the new South African tournament, you've got the UAE tournament, and hopefully that's replicated in the women's game as well. Hopefully we can have these discussions. Mm. Hopefully we can say, you know, well, our player X is, you know, turning down Australian selection or Indian selection or whatever. Hopefully not English selection, but you know what I mean. Hopefully we can have these talks where players are playing so much cricket, because the more cricket, the better. Obviously, I think international cricket is still the pinnacle, personally. Some players may disagree. I'm not a player, so that's fine. But, you know, we want more cricket. The more cricket, the better, and it's looking good at the moment.
100%. I think it's interesting, because I sit on a fence. I really enjoy franchise cricket, and it's a route I want to pursue professionally in my analysis. But it's interesting because Heather Knight has spoken on this, and she worries about the depth in women's cricket to be able, for the four franchise leagues, to be able to take players that maybe teams will suffer. And so it's an interesting point, and I think it's going to be a really interesting couple of years for women's cricket, and it definitely is going to need some careful management to make sure that everything is upheld to a good standard and to be progressing the standard forward. And I think there is a way that franchise cricket and more traditional methods of cricket in terms of regional setups and domestic setups can coexist. It's just getting that kind of dialed in right. Well, thank you very much for giving us quite a detailed insight in Harmanpreet Kaur and Lauren Bell. Right. Okay, Lily, we're going on to your game changer and young gun. Who have you selected for your game changer?
My game changer is Talia McGrath. And I think
a striker through and through.
Yeah, not to seem like, you know, obviously I am South Australian, so slightly biased, but she was the first one that came to mind, and I couldn't really just go away from her purely because of such an outstanding year she's had pretty much in every single tournament and series she's played in. Everywhere she's been, all over the world, she's done incredible. So yeah, it's her for me.
No, 100%. We'll start with the WBBL, as we have talked about her being a striker.
Yeah.
She has kind of, she's moved around in her role in the team in terms of, they were kind of playing with her 3 and 4. And do you think that was more the fact that they were trying to make sure that the players above her and around her were in the better position to make their maximising, rather than she was the more adaptable player?
Yeah. Well, obviously, she's been with the strikers since day one. So she's obviously very comfortable within this striker squad. I'm sure she doesn't mind being thrown anywhere. But yeah, I think definitely with the players that were at the top order, like Katie Mack and Deandra Dottin, I think she definitely would have been, as captain, would have been encouraging in letting them get the strikers off to the flying start they would have wanted, with Deandra Dottin going big and Katie Mack supporting her. So yeah, I think Talia is definitely suited into a 3 or 4. I think that is a really good position for her, because she can go big, but it's also, yeah, like you said, to just watch and see what the others can do first.
It's an interesting position, because you either have to come in, you can come in at maybe the second ball and have to play a bit of an anchor role, or potentially as the game progresses, you still need to go pretty hard, but you're 1 wicket down potentially after one ball. But then also you come in with 5 overs left to go, and you have to be that aggressive player. And it's interesting in terms of, I've talked on the podcast how I very much thought that Deandra Dottin was better slightly down the order and not opening. And in terms of, I had a pretty deep discussion with my brother on early podcast. And then they moved her down to 4 and you guys won. So, and she started scoring runs. So I felt pretty validated. But it's interesting how you finalised with that Laura Wolfart and Katie Mack top order, then Talia McGrath playing at 3, and then Deandra Dottin, the powerful batter that she is and the powerful boundary hitter that she is, coming in at 4. Now, in terms of, I was looking over her WBBL numbers, and it's quite interesting in terms of the seasons she's gone up in strike rate. So she's jumped from, not this year, but the year before, she jumped from, in the 2021-22 seasons, she jumped from a boundary percentage of 12% to last year a boundary percent of 16%. And then it's also reflected in her strike rate. But her average has actually dropped. So it's interesting in terms of, would you say her role is very much last year, she had to do more run scoring at more of a conservative-ish, 117 strike rate is not bad for women's cricket at all, but more of a conservative role to actually score the runs that you needed to reach the knockout and the final of the WBBL?
Yeah, I mean, I think she definitely was relied on a bit more. And I think that, you know, being a captain in that position, I think that's maybe where the striker's downfall was at the end of the season. So obviously making the grand final against the Scorchers, you know, I think it might have possibly been getting to her a bit, where she's kind of like, you know, well, it's on me, you know, I've got to score these runs and win these games. And I think in comparison to this year, obviously not playing too much of a role with the bat, like, you know, leaving, like you said, dropping down the order a bit, leaving it to the openers. And I think that took a bit more pressure off her, and it really led her to be able to fully maximize her as a captain, and not only captain with the batting order, but captain with the field and the ball as well. So I think, yeah, I think it's helped her and definitely helped the team out as well. And you know, it worked because they won the title, obviously.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it's interesting in terms of, because your international player also changed. You said goodbye to a loyal servant, Dame Van Dijker, in terms of absolute brilliant for you in the last couple of seasons. But you welcomed Deandra Dott in. And do you reckon it kind of changed Talia's mindset a little bit? The fact that she did know that someone else of pure ability, really good boundary striking ability, came in below her, so she can maybe bat with a little bit more freedom?
Yeah, I think so. And obviously on, you know, I had a chat to Katie Mack about this sort of dynamic and the batting order. And something that she mentioned was, you know, they signed Deandra Dott in, and the word she used was, we signed her so she would just go out there and smack it. That was kind of like what she's been included in the team to do. So yeah, I definitely think so. Obviously losing Dani is never great, because the experience she has is,
with the ball and with the bat.
Absolutely. And the captaincy as well. Like, she's obviously captained for Invincibles, and she's been amazing. Obviously,
I've come on the bad side of her captaincy in the first ever game of the 100, when her and her wife, Marianne Capp, put on a brilliant partnership to see the Manchester Originals out of the first game, which I was very upset at. But in terms of, they managed the game really well, in terms of the game management that she has, and that she has had for a long time in women's cricket, is just incredible. But to have that slightly different player, more dynamic, who can clear the ropes as well, in terms of her six hitting percentages is incredible, as well as her boundary percentage is just really high. That gives a captain a little bit more license in her role to play a little bit more aggressively. Maybe that's what we see with that increased boundary percentage. With her bowling, how do you think it kind of, her bowling has changed, her bowling role has changed throughout the season in terms of the last two seasons?
We're talking about Talia, right?
Yes, not Talia. We're talking about Talia.
Yes. I think she's definitely taken on a bit more of a role with the bats. Now, obviously, she's known to be an all-rounder, but I think she's shied away from bowling, actually. And I think she did it in the 100, obviously, for the Brave. I'm pretty sure she bowled the death over to Siver, and the Brave came out on top of that one, but then obviously they didn't win the final. But I think, I think she's maybe not like trusting herself enough with the ball. That's what it seemed like as a striker's viewer. You know, she wasn't bowling her best that we've seen before. And I definitely think the way forward for her is probably, you know, really, really focusing on her batting. But like, obviously we do know in the past she is an all-rounder and she can do all-rounding things, but I think in more recent times over the past year, she's definitely been doing a lot better with the bat. That's for sure.
I think I've always held the belief that you're either a batting all-rounder or you're a bowling all-rounder, in terms of, I feel it's really hard to be consistently brilliant at both. There is always going to naturally be a time where you lean towards, and in terms of, I don't think, it's really hard to say in terms of the men's and the women's game, I don't have a number on this, but I feel working in women's cricket, there's a lot more women that also are all-rounders, in terms of, and I still think that in terms of you lean more one way or the other, in terms of, you definitely have the stronger suit. And I think, in terms of, we're talking about reliance on her bowling, I think they relied on her a bit more last year. So she bowled 17 overs in last year's WBBL with 12 wickets and an economy of seven, so fairly high. And then this year, she only bowled 14 with an economy of 8.7, an average of 40, and then only three wickets. So definitely, it mirrors what you're saying in terms of she didn't feel she was the go-to bowler in pressure situations, maybe, in terms of she had Megan Shute, she had Deandra Dottins as a strike bowler, she potentially has Darcy Brown, she has Amanda Jade Wellington, in terms of, so that's four world-class bowlers. In terms of, have I missed anybody else off on that strikers list, in terms of who can fill in? Katie Mack can fill in some part-time overs, can't she?
We haven't seen Katie Mack bowl for us yet, but okay. Gemma Barsby has definitely been she's really stepped up into her role. Obviously, okay. Including Gemma Barsby, she wouldn't have done too much for the heat and the scorches in the past that she's played for. But since she came to the strikers, obviously with her left and right arm bowling, she's taken some really key wickets. So yeah,
it's Gemma. Interesting to see how potentially then that's five bowlers there. And maybe Tali McGrath, in terms of think she can very much, right, if I focus on my batting and if we need overs from me in my striker's role, I can very much go back on that. I can very much be that as my second string, and if we really need it, I can put in a couple of overs maybe in the where would you say where she bowls majority in the WBBL
from memory? She kind of I don't really remember her bowling at the beginning. Middle and end, I'd say. You obviously open with Megan Shute and Darcy Brown, and then you kind of bring Amanda Wellington in the middle and Gemma Barsby, but yeah, she's usually towards the end, and then they save her overs so she does have time to bowl all four if she needs to. And then if they don't quite go to plan, they'll go, okay, that's enough, we don't need Tali to bowl anymore, and they'll just bring someone else in. So yeah that's what kind of happens.
Yeah, no, in terms of her ability to strike the ball, really positive boundary percentage. And in terms of how does that play into her role playing for Australia? Where do you think in terms of she'll be used in the next couple of years?
I think she'll be used in a very similar spot to where she is in the strikers squad. I think she's obviously shown what she can do with winning the title for the strikers. And I think Australian cricket have seen that and they're going to be like, right, well, we're going to, you know, do the same for our Australian team.
Yeah.
And obviously she's got quite a similar role playing for South Australia Scorpions in the WNCL as well. So I think everything that she's done in the past year has really just worked for her and has really kind of like campaigned for her to be in the top middle order for Australia as well.
Yeah. So she's going to be that one of those top middle order players that hopefully hopefully for the Australians, not for me, in terms of don't want to wish this, but in terms of Mooney and Lanning can get off to that incredible start. And then they don't need, in terms of an anchor role, they need the more aggressive Tali McGrath to come in and hit those low worldy boundaries, which she has the ability to do. It's going to be interesting to see how she plays a role. Do you see her potentially being picked up, as we've said multiple times before, in this WPL auction?
I think there's a high possibility. She's obviously played, like we said, lots of cricket all around the world. I think playing in the 100 would, you know, help with that WPL selection. And I think if she just carries on doing what she's done for the strikers and for the Scorpions for Australia, then I think, yeah, there's a very, very high chance that she will.
In terms of that skill set, in terms of being a boundary striker, but then also having the maturity in terms of anchoring the innings if it's needed, it's a very interesting skill set. And it's also it's very in demand skill set in terms of your middle order, your top order batters. So I definitely think some of the franchises will be kind of lining up. Well, we don't actually know in terms of how the auction process is going to be carried out. Still kind of up in the air, but definitely will be thinking if Tali McGrath is going to put her name in, a couple of franchises will definitely be eyeing up her signature for signing for them. Right, straight on to our young gun. And I'm very excited for this one because I have little knowledge about this player. So take it away, Lily. Who is our second young gun of the podcast?
So it's Georgia Wareham for me. Now, obviously, her selection in the World Cup has been super interesting, and I think something that's kind of surprised everybody. So yeah, I thought I'd chuck her in there, and I think she'd be the right person for this role.
Absolutely. Tell us a bit more about the Georgia Wareham story. So she's been out for 2 years with an ACL injury.
Yeah, so it was I remember it. I remember watching what happened. It was against the Strikers, actually, in WBBL 07. It was early on in the season in the round games, and she was fielding. She was out in the deep, out on the boundary. I can't remember exactly which fielding position, but it was definitely on the boundary. And she's running in and she just like, she's just on the floor. And after she fields this ball and she kind of misses it and it like her leg just kind of goes everywhere. And she was like down for ages and all the players and staff were all around her and she was like, couldn't walk on it. So they were like carrying her off and we haven't seen her since. Since that, we haven't seen
any horrible incident for a young cricketer. How old was she when she got that injury?
She would have been probably 21, 22 if she's 23 now. Yeah.
And an ACL injury in terms of, it's a horrible injury to get. And it can be the slight of twist in terms of when you're going so fast and it just really affects your knee and your strength of your knee to build that back up. But anyway, sorry, keep going with her story.
Yeah, so obviously she's been in around the Australian team for quite some time before that, obviously making her Australia debut at 19.
Okay.
And then being such a key player for the Renegades, she's a leg spin bowler and she, she's like I said, been super, super key for the Renegades and then for Australia as well. But then, yeah, after this injury, she just kind of fell off the face of the cricket earth, as you would, not being able to play anything. But I think... she obviously missed out on WBBL 08. So that's why I was like, when I saw that she was included in this World Cup squad, I was like, oh, she's better. Well, that's good to know because we haven't seen her at all. So yeah, that's kind of it in a nutshell. You know, she's been around for quite some time and finally, hopefully, is getting back to it.
Yeah, it's an interesting one in terms of including, do you think she will fill in as more injury replacement for an Alana King or Jess Jonathan if one of their spinners goes down with hopefully not a terrible injury and she's going to be called up to fill in that role of middle over, chuck in some leg spin, get us a wicket, break a partnership?
I think so. And what's quite disappointing about her whole story is Alana King was her replacement initially because she was the leg spinner for the Australian team and she was doing so well. And then when she injured herself, they were like, right, it's between Amanda Wellington and Alana King. And that was they were the two players who Alana King hadn't really seen Australian cricket much. You know, she's playing for Melbourne Stars and the Scorchers and she hadn't really had any taste of Australian cricket, whereas Amanda Wellington had been in and out quite a bit. And then they ultimately decided with Alana King and she's done incredible things for Australia. So yeah, I'm sure Georgia Wareham's super gutted because it originally was her position and she'd done so much to keep that role for herself within the Australian team. And then an injury like that ruled her out of it. And yeah, Alana King came in and replaced her. And now it's looking like she won't be able to get that spot back very easily.
It's hard with an injury in terms of, and also the crazy depth that Australia have in terms of they have three. Well, potentially, if we don't know how Georgia Wareham will go again, because we haven't seen her in that much competitive cricket, am I right?
Yeah, not recently. No. Like we said, like obviously Big Bash, she played lots of Big Bash. She's in the World Cup squad, the 2020 Women's T20 World Cup squad, but yeah, didn't play too much in that. But yeah, Renegades mainly is her area.
Where she's seen her a lot. In terms of, it's quite interesting because she... She doesn't, her best figures are 3 for 12. She has an economy of 5.8, not bad, and an average of 13.52, all pretty impressive numbers. Bowling strike rate of 13.97. For those who don't know, that's she takes a wicket every 14 balls. So interesting numbers to take a punt on. Do you think also her batting ability will have played a pretty key role in that? Because she does have for the Renegades, she plays a pretty central role batting wise as well.
Yeah, from memory, she's one of those ones who can just come in the lower order and just hit them. You know, when you kind of like when you lose wickets and you're scrambling for just that extra couple of 10, 20, 30 runs to get you over a defendable mark, she can come in and hit them. Obviously, she's not relied on too much with the bat, but she definitely more so the ball. But yeah, she can hit a ball. And we have seen that before in the past when she has won games for the Renegades.
Yeah, 100%. Just looking at the 2021 WBBL, she played six matches and then obviously that terrible injury came in. But she averaged 46 with a strike rate of 146 and a boundary percentage of 20, which is pretty standout-ish for the women's game. I know this, can I just say, it's a small sample set, and obviously that injury came in. But it's an interesting player to take a punt on in terms of, would it be fair to say it's unlikely she'll play in terms of in that World Cup squad?
Yeah, I think it would be. I think it would have to be like an injury to someone like an Alana King to come in.
We've seen stranger things. Sport, it's risky. It's an injury-prone game, so you never know. But more for potentially we see her going further in Renegades cricket and potentially franchise cricket in the future, and in future having more battles to regain that Australia spot.
Yeah. I think so. I think like we said, obviously with she last season for the Renegades, before she got injured, she playing her crucial role, and I really hope that she can come back into this Renegades side and next season and play how she's played in the past and get herself back into this Australian side, because like we said, she was the key spinner. And to see that place being taken away from her is really gutting, and I'm quite disappointed about it because I really rate her as a player. And I definitely think that that's something that she'll have on the cards, is getting back out there and playing consistently for Australia, I think.
No, 100%. It's interesting. It's hard with injuries, and sport's very injury prone, and it's hard to say where a progression would have been right now if there hadn't have been that injury. But I think you never want to get injured, but it's not happened at a worse time. She's still young. She's still 23, so she still has time to build her career, with it be Australia or with it be the Renegades, in terms of become a real cornerstone. And the Renegades haven't done exactly brilliantly in the last couple of seasons, so potentially that kind of batter, lower order batter who can score some crucial boundaries and aggressive leg spinner who can take some wickets in the middle overs might be just what they need to kind of trigger a bit of a revival of the Renegades cricket. Thank you very much, Lily, for those insights on Tali McGrath, and see where she's going to rocket in the next couple of years, and Georgia Wareham in terms of coming back from that injury and see if she can battle out with for that leg spin spot and that spinner spot in the middle order of that Australian team. Thank you very much for joining me on the Catch It podcast, and I'd love to have you guys on again. It's been a really fun episode.
Yeah, thank you so much for having both me and Ollie. Obviously, you know, can't speak for him, but yeah, we've definitely really enjoyed it, and it's been brilliant to be on the other end of a podcast for once.
No, 100%, it's been brilliant. Thank you very much to everyone listening, and we'll see you again soon.